Welcome to the podcast of Casper Faith Assembly. This podcast is presented in the context of our Sunday morning service. We hope you enjoy this presentation.
Now you can hear me. Great to be with you this morning. Just love sharing worship. I'm glad I got to speak here today because I felt a little bit like a tag along where my wife was speaking at the women's event, and I'm really delighted to be with you. You are gathering right from the outset that I do not have a North Dakota accent. Some people mistake it for a South Dakota accent, but it's a lot further south than that. Just in case you're wondering, let's get this right out the way. Both my wife and I grew up in South Africa. We were born in the great city of Johannesburg, grew up there. And then, as your pastor said, we've literally lived all around the world. Most recently, I was the president of the British AG College and Graduate School in England. We were there for 8 years, the biggest Pentecostal institution in the whole of Europe. And now we're in North Dakota. How exciting is that? When people say to me, "So where do you come from?" I say, "North Dakota, oh." They say, "North Dakota, oh." I say, "Well, every time I said North Dakota, people say, oh, so I thought I'd just save them the bother, and I say North Dakota, oh, and spring it together." But let me warn you, Wyoming had snow before North Dakota, so don't think anything about North Dakota being the end of the earth. Coming over those mountains on our way here, we thought maybe we were at the end of the earth with all that snow coming down in September. But great to be with you. Wonderful to share fellowship with you. And just a couple of things that I really thought would help this morning as I try to bring you up to date and share and obviously come around God's word. I hope you're ready for a good time in God's presence. You know, when a person is a visiting preacher and there's a word from God like we received this morning, and that word from God is right in line with what you've prepared to speak, that's a pretty encouraging little time. You know that God's in the business of wanting to do something and accomplish something before our day is out. But I want to do three things. The first one, I really want to bring you up to speed a little bit with Trinity Bible College. Trinity Bible College is in a small town. It's in Ellendale, North Dakota. But I want to bring you good news today that astonishing things are happening in that place. In fact, that Bible college has been one of the greatest seed beds of missionaries and ministers that this nation has had. I go all over the world. I was in Greece not all that long ago, met a person. He said, "I'm a graduate of Trinity Bible College. Come into almost any church in the upper Midwest, and it's led by people who have gone through Trinity Bible College." And so I just thought I'd bring you some updates today. This is a slightly dated little PowerPoint, but we're operating under this rubric: discover, learn, imagine, go. I could honestly preach that this morning, but that's how we define the journey at Trinity. People come, they discover life, discover why God's created them, why He's made them. They really need to commit themselves to learn. We unexcusably, without any apology, have committed ourselves to academic rigor at the school. We have really raised the bar, and this year our ACT and SAT scores have gone way up over previous years. Imagine what God can do with you, and then go. Here are a few little things. We're going to go through these slides pretty quickly as I share them with you. Next slide, please. The first one is that we've launched a number of really innovative new things. One of them is called Pack Your Bags. You might not know this, but let me tell you, right now as I speak to you, the average U.S. student, in other words, over 50% of U.S. students take up to 6 years to graduate through their first degree. They're taking 4 semesters longer than they need to. Now, do the math on that. That's pretty expensive. You add up those extra semesters, it all adds up. And there are many reasons for it. One of them is just the way in which colleges operate. Colleges need to make money, and so they're quite happy for allowing a certain amount of credit slippage. If you call your major and you don't really want to follow through on it, that's okay. Just lose a semester and start all over again and pay all over again. That's kind of how it works, and that's not going to help us moving forward in populating our churches with passionate men and women who've had a great training. And so we want to be part of the solution, and we've launched a program called Pack Your Bags. It's right now going. We've got 7 intrepid students. It is a year of an academic year, pre-college. It's got 4 phases to it. It's got a life skills phase. We actually teach students that it's not a good idea to text while you're going through your first interview for a job. You know, I mean, that might sound pretty self-evident, but actually there's a generation that have never been told that, have no idea how to interact other than through media. And so we work on things like articulating your message, how to actually say who you are. And it, like,
again, I get pretty excited, so just help me as I go through. And then the second phase, oh, by the way, at the end of that first phase, we pack them in a van, we go off into an inner city area, into a Native American reservation, we do all kinds of different things, and we serve, we help people, we get involved with people who are a lot less fortunate than ourselves, and you only need about 2 weeks of that to realize home's really quite a nice place, mom's cooking is pretty good, and my bedroom's a comfortable room. You know, we want to try and help people appreciate life. Then we bring them back. We go into a second phase. We're just rushing ahead a little bit. I'll finish. I'll get to that in a moment. But we go to a second phase, which is a ministry phase. We teach people how to articulate their faith, how to share, how to get drama going. We put them in an airplane at the end of that, shoot them off to a place of the world that we're very familiar with, South Africa. I just came back about 6 days ago from South Africa. We put them into after-school care, home-based AIDS care programs, local church ministry, just a full-on 6 weeks. We give them that kind of exposure as they share their faith in another environment, bring them back, going to a Bible phase, teach basic Bible literacy, put them on an airplane again. They go off to Israel. They kayak on the Jordan River. They walk where Jesus walked. They live in the land of the Bible. Their experience will never, ever be the same again. And then we bring them back for an exit program. And that exit program deals with things like how to understand the college environment, how to make application to the best college, how to maximize your college experience, how to graduate in less than 4 years, how to maximize Title IV funding. All that kind of stuff that a lot of people have no idea what to do, and it's getting more complicated by the day. So that's called pack your bags. So if any of you are seniors today, you need to grab your mom and dad afterwards, say there's no negotiating. I'm going to pack your bags next year. It's a really exciting program. Then we've involved all of our students in mission trips. One of the things we're passionate about is mobilizing people not only to learn, but actually to get involved and understand how life works. So this last year, that's a group that went away to Pine Ridge Reservation in North Dakota. They came back having served for 2 weeks. Their studies changed. Their lives changed. Honestly, down that row of students there, I heard again and again and again, literally everyone, my life will never be the same again. I've got insight like I've never seen. I think that's pretty innovative. It's pretty exciting about what's going on within the academic program. Let's slip through to the next one. Our enrollment, our applications last year were up 20%. That's pretty good. We didn't matriculate all of those into the student body, but it's been an exciting year. We've got students coming to us from 36 states around the nation, and we've also reinstated our distance education, which is now fully functioning, and you can see that that's slightly dated. So we're excited about a growing enrollment, and our new programs and majors are starting to operate this year. Next slide. Let's just share with you, some of you, Craig, you would probably remember, right in the middle of the campus is this majestic building called Davidson Hall. It's a beautiful building. It's 100 years old, got great big Corinthian columns. I walked onto the campus. It happened just to be in the middle of January, about minus 19 below. But I looked at this building. I said, so what's that used for? And I was informed that it had been closed up, mothballed, not used at all. I cannot explain the emotion I had in that moment. I think, you know, if God's given us an asset, we need to use our assets very, very well. And so it was like somebody kicked me right here. I said, on my watch, that's going to come back. We're going to take it back a stick at a time, a brick at a time, a room at a time. And we've been doing that. This last year, we were able to put on a brand new roof. The thing is now waterproof. During the summer, because it had frozen for 3 winters in a row, the basement wall had literally imploded and the building was falling backwards. During the summer, we got great big jacks in. We jacked that building back up. We rebuilt the basement walls. It's now sound. That building, that room down on the right-hand side is now our faculty lounge called the Commons. It's a fantastic room. We put in over a mile of new cabling during the summer, and we're taking it back a room at a time. Now, that might not overly excite you, but I'm telling you, I'm doing double somersaults when I think about that. It's really exciting. We are renovating the first floor, $8,000 per room, 70 rooms. Do the math. Please believe with us that we'll get this building back as a state-of-the-art academic administration building. We're well on our way, and there's several other buildings that we're committing to renovate. We've just put a new roof on the old president's house as well. Let's just slip on through. I'm taking too much time here because I get excited about these things. Finances. I got your attention right away. Everybody wants to know about finances. Let me just stand with you in your debt elimination project. I believe that's a good thing, friends. I'm not so sure that we should carry these great big burdens. Let's get them out of the way. Sometimes it's necessary just to help us through a phase, but then we've got to stand together. Well, I've got good news for you. Trinity has operated in the red for 15 years in a row. This last year, we finished in the black with a $60,000 operating budget surplus. And then I can bring you up to date there. 72%. One of the big, hairy, scary things that I discovered when we arrived at the school was that without a whole lot of documentation, the school had contracted about $650,000 worth of short-term loans. That's not a secure mortgage like what you're talking about in the church here. These are these things where somebody says, I'll lend 50, I'll lend 20, and somebody could have a bad breakfast and phone up and say, I want my money back, and we've got no terms on which to negotiate that. Our accreditors were scared silly. Our auditors were putting all kinds of restrictions upon us. I knew we had to get rid of that thing. And so we believed God. We trusted God. I don't know how it's all happened, but here's the good news. By the end of last year, we've 72% paid back. Right now, as I speak to you, 100% of those debts are gone, completely gone. They wiped out, and we're pretty glad about that. Our monthly income is up. So I'm just sharing these things, partly for your rejoicing, but also to reassure you that this institution, which is our institution really, is coming back onto solid ground and solid footing. We've amortized our other debt over the long term, and I'm trusting God we'll kill that pretty shortly as well. Next slide. Let's just show you a few things. Hey, athletics. For a small school, we've got an outstanding athletics program. Now, I had to get my head around this, friends. You've just got to understand, this was a challenge to me. I come from a part of the world where we play rugby. Does anybody know what rugby is? Anybody ever been introduced to rugby? It's the game that real men play. I know I'm on dangerous ground, but I actually believe this. You know, I'd never seen anybody dress up in helmets and padding. And what sort of wimps did that? I didn't understand it, you know. Then I saw these boys, nearly 300 pounds. I thought, well, if I'm going to go onto that field, I want all the padding I can get, you know. And these guys have come to us. We've got an amazing football team. We've got a great basketball team. The girls went to nationals this year. I think out of our various athletics teams, we had 4 All-Americans named this year in our division. And I'm really excited about that. For a small school to be able to provide those additional options has just been really exciting. And so the Trinity Lions are, and they won this weekend against one of our real rivals. That's pretty exciting too. So next one, there's our new fitness center. Some of you might not have been onto our campus for a long time, but right there is our brand new fitness center. It was all paid for. We didn't have to borrow to do it. It is state of the art. It is one of the finest in our state, maybe in our region, and it's been a real help to all our athletic programs. So a really outstanding new facility on our campus. And then we're running home on these few things now. A couple more. Let's look at the next slide. Here I am able to announce, this is really exciting, for the first time ever, and it's coming in the fall of 2014, we have a postgraduate program at Trinity Bible College. We accredited through the summer. We got the news that we have a fully accredited MA in missional leadership, and we believe this is going to have a huge impact on Christian leaders throughout our region. We've brought the best of what we achieved in Europe. In Europe, our college had the largest graduate program of any university in the whole of the continent, with the exception of the Arts Department of Cambridge University. So we kind of know what we're doing here. We grew over 300. We had over 300 master students at any one time, plus a variety of doctoral students. So we've brought those strengths. We've structured it, the sort of best of the European model, incorporated it into a U.S. setting, and starting on, it's a kind of a part-time taught in short intensives. Over the year, we're starting the MA in missional leadership next fall. So please pray for us. That's a huge, big development that we're excited about. And then we'll finish up here. What else have we got to say? Our academic programs are there. I've got a few of these brochures at the back. Not a lot. My wife's used up everything that we brought this weekend, but a few of those at the back. Please make sure you take one of those. And then our alumni, I think, is the next slide. Over 50 active missionaries right now, nearly 8,000 alumni serving all over the world. Pretty exciting, and we want to add to that number, large numbers every single year. And I think that's the last one, except what can you do for us? And this is what I say, refer students. We think that we've got a unique opportunity, especially for sort of upper Midwest students. Support Christian higher education. You're in an Assemblies of God church. Do you know that only 17% of Assemblies of God churches give any money to help the next generation of students in Christian higher education? And we could make a difference there, and certainly pray for us. So thank you guys for helping us through with that slide. I've brought a number of our books as well. I'll refer to this a few times while I'm preaching. Again, Carol.
Carol has used them, nearly all of them up at the ladies' event, but over and over again through the years, people said, when are you going to put that in writing? When are you going to write that down? A kind of what we call narrative theology. Help people understand that God is much bigger than you've ever dreamed or imagined. Life is incredibly complicated. It throws things at us that we couldn't expect or plan, and yet God is there before those things even arise. And we had determined not to write a book until much later on in our lives, until we had been able to get a bit of life behind us. Had no idea that in the last decade, life would throw at us things that only other families ever have. Normal families never have what we've experienced. And we, for example, our son was in a horrendous motor accident just 11 years ago. We fought for his life for 28 days. He was told that he would never live. Then they told us he would never ever walk. Then they told us he would never ever read. Then they told us he'd never ever study. Well, I'm glad to tell you our son now is living in Los Angeles, a full and happy life, and he's completely restored. It's a remarkable story, and maybe one day we'll have more time to tell it. And then I was diagnosed under remarkable circumstances with a huge aortic aneurysm. Some of you have heard of that sort of thing, and big, major kind of surgery. So we did a bit of living. We learned a bit of life and had the privilege of matching that with the fact that we had the privilege of some higher education as well. And so we put it together in a real readable book called A Certain Life, Enduring Principles for Life and Living, and I've got some of those. They're $15. They help us go around the world, and we can take all sorts of ways. I've even got one of these fancy little gadgets that goes on my iPad to swipe a card. So if you've never seen one of those, come along. I'll swipe your card 3 or 4 times just to show you how it works, and we'll be able to let you have some of those books. You know, this morning, if I was normally, under normal circumstances, speaking to you, I probably would open the Bible and I would say to you, please refer to this text, and then I'd help you understand where the text was located, why it was written, what its background is, and then how it applies to us today. That would just be the kind of normal way that I try and unpackage truth to you. But when I thought about what I wanted to share, and it's in line with what God's already spoken to us throughout today, I realized that actually I could have probably turned to any part of the Bible. I certainly could have turned to any book of the Bible, perhaps most chapters of the Bible, because you will discover if you read the Bible accurately and you interpret it well, that the Bible is actually made up of what I call overarching stories. The Bible is not just a collection of words. It's not just what the original Greek says. You know, I've often said when I meet the original Greek, I think I'm going to kill him because I've heard so much about the original Greek. But that's actually not the way to interpret the Bible accurately. You have to understand that the Bible is the record of God's dealings with families and nations and peoples over whole decades and centuries and even over millennia. And you string together the purposes of God over the long term. When you get that, then you're able to apply it to your own life, even the small little details of your living. So it's a good thing to look for these overarching stories, these big narratives, and there are lots of them. For example, there's priesthood. Priesthood is a big deal in the Bible. You discover way back in the ancient part of the Bible, a mysterious man by the name of Melchizedek comes along. Abraham pays tithes to him. And then you discover a kind of a model that proceeds all the way through to our great high priest, Jesus Christ the righteous. And when you get the big story, you're able to understand the small story. You're getting that? You understand. That's a good way to understand the Bible. Now, I've got one of those overarching stories, overarching narratives that I want to speak to you today about. And to put it simply, it's this, that there is a constant motif, there is a regular story in the Bible that makes it clear, makes it plain that whenever God is at work in human lives, whenever God works, whenever God does something, there is a process that you've got to go through in order to come out the other side. There's always something you go through. There's the refiner's fire. There is the polishing wheel. There is the potter's wheel. There is the flood and the storm. There is always a process in the Bible where God uses circumstances and processes to produce the kind of people he wants to do the kind of work he wants. In other words, you go through to come out the other side in the plans and purposes of God. No shortcuts, no negotiations, no way out. It's just part of the package, friends. If somebody didn't tell you that when you became a Christian, let me tell you it right now. As a Christ follower, part of the deal is you will go through stuff. Stuff happens.
It's just part of being this side of heaven. But the point for us as Christ followers is we don't stay in the stuff. We go through to come out. We go through to arise to the plans of God. God's at work in our lives, polishing and refining that we might come out the kind of people he wants us to be. I mean, think of the Bible. Think all the way back to the ancient parts of the Bible. Noah had to go through the storm and through the flood in order to come out and be the preserver of the human race. Then we get into the great era of the patriarchs. I mean, that's so full of these stories. What about Joseph? I mean, here's a man who went through many times. He had to go through the pit. He had to go through Potiphar's house. He had to go through the prison. You're getting the message, just always going through before he became the prime minister of Egypt. He would never have achieved that high office if in the purposes of God, he hadn't have gone through. And then what about Jonah? I mean, he had to go through. That might just be pushing it a little bit. At least he went in and came out the same way. I had an irreverent preacher friend who paused while he was preaching, thinking it's a pretty good thing he came out the front and not the other way around. But Jonah had to go through in order to come out and be the servant of God to Nineveh. If he hadn't have gone through that, and then we get the great story of Daniel. Daniel himself going through the lion's den, the three Hebrew boys going through the fire. It's just a constant message in the Bible. And it doesn't stop at the end of the Old Testament. In the New Testament, you find the writings of Paul. He went through stoning and shipwreck and hunger and famine. And he did it all for the cause of the gospel. And then the greatest example of all, we would not be here today if Jesus did not go through suffering and death and the tomb and then rose again. He went through to rise. And the same story is true for us. We go through things to rise to the purposes of God. Have I been fairly persuasive today? Are you with me? Is my accent just going way over your head? I know it's cold in Wyoming. You know, it's, and I know the altitude's pretty high, but, you know, just an itsy bitsy little amen every now and again would super encourage me. Are you getting the message, friends? Am I connecting? You're understanding? Does that kind of ring true to how you discover the Word of God? You go through to come out to the purposes of God. You say, well, I go through stuff, but what do you really mean? Well, you know, I put a little list down. I thought, you know, some of us go through disappointment. I don't know how you handle disappointment, but let me just give you a window into my life. I need you to know I handle it badly. I'm an idealist. I was kind of born that way. I'm wired that way. I want it to work out perfectly every time. And I have that expectation. You know, when we became parents, I thought I'd have the perfect kids. They'd just sail through life. They'd excel in everything that they do. And they have. No, they haven't really. But, you know, we've had our challenges with our kids. But I'm one of those kind of idealists that doesn't handle disappointment well. And actually, if you consider what it's like to be a Christian in a church like this, our vocabulary is actually one which constantly encourages us to believe that God's in complete control and God will work all things together for good. And so theologically, we don't have a big capacity really for disappointment. That's why sometimes it's just good to get raw. And I have a visiting preacher who leaves after lunch and just says it as it is, and you don't have to hear him again. So I can say whatever I like, friends. I'm on my way. You know, but I want to tell you, the reality is we do face disappointment in life. And disappointment can be incredibly debilitating. Why didn't that work out? Why were my prayers not answered? Why didn't those good Christian people who promised so much deliver on what they said they were going to deliver? Why has life not risen to me the way that it should? And disappointment can be incredibly crippling. But here's the good news. Part of the purposes of God is not for you to remain in a state of perpetual disappointment, but to go through and come out and say, hitherto has God kept me and blessed me. You're with me. So I'm encouraged. What about the failure of leaders? You know, good people who should never fail, people in whom you put your trust. The truth is, friends, that the pathway of Christian life is absolutely littered with people who have just let us down and failed us. I remember years ago, and I tell a little bit of the story in our book, we found ourselves responding to the Mozambican refugee crisis right on the eastern border of South Africa and Mozambique. Horrendous stories. I met a woman who had literally lost her baby the night before to a pack of hyenas that had snatched her baby off her breast. And we were so moved. We were so troubled. We were so disturbed that we just had to bring a response out of our limited resources. I drove with some mission students out to this area, found this traumatized woman. We went back the next day. We started digging latrines. We got involved with small amounts of food distribution. We just did what we could, and yet we had no resources to do it. And I got this call one day. It was pretty exciting. It was from an American, and he said, I've just been asked by one of America's leading Christians to get involved. He was a very well-known televangelist. He said, and he'd like a response to these refugees. Could I come down and you take me out and see what it is? I thought, oh God, this is pretty exciting. This could really be the resource we're looking for to help these poor people. He came down, we drove out. He said, this is amazing. You guys have done so much with so little. We were driving back. We were really excited. He said, I'm going to put in a great report. I think this could be tens of thousands of dollars. Well, that was just like mega, mega, mega out there money for me back then. I was so excited. Do you know that within 24 hours of that conversation, the news broke that this man had had an affair, he had fallen morally, that everything was now collapsing around about him, and I got this call. I was so excited yesterday. I'm sorry to tell you that we just can't follow through on this. This ministry is imploding right now. I'm 29 years old. I think, oh God, what's this all about? Key leader fails us. And there are people whose lives are shipwrecked because leaders fail. Here's the news, friends. Leaders may fall and people may fail, but God wants to take you through to come out the other side and say, I still have this confidence in him who is faithful and true, beginning and end, and in whom there is no shadow cast by turning. Maybe some of you need to hear that word today. You know, in the world that I live, the academic world, I discover that academic disappointment can be incredibly debilitating. I watch students on the front row of our chapel, and by the way, our chapel's a pretty vibrant place where God's doing wonderful things, and just like we had word from God here this morning, we're having that in our chapel all the time. These students, they could take the world for Jesus, kneel at the altar, take my life, Lord, let it be consecrated, Lord, to thee, and they go out and they check their grades, and they don't get what they expected, and suddenly they can't get up the next morning. You know, just a little grade. I mean, they should be getting good grades, but every now and again, those of us who've done some academics, you don't get the results you want, but hey, you go through. That's part of it. You don't get a degree for good behavior. Or just showing up. You got to do the work. You got to learn. And if you don't learn, it'll show in your grades. So you improve the next time. You go through and you come out. Oh, I love to get into students' faces over that one. Here's a big one. What about sickness? I wish I had a really comprehensive theology about sickness. And this probably won't help you one little bit. When a doctor says, a doctor of theology says this, I don't understand a theology of sickness any more now than the day I first found Christ. I don't know why some people get healed and why some don't. There's a whole chapter in our book where I wrote about even in the resurrection. I grew up in a good Presbyterian church, came to know Christ as a teenager, wanted to come to a church like this. Went to my parents. I said, you know, I want to leave your boring church and go to a nice church. And they were understanding. They said, well, before you do that, you need to have the good manners to go and speak to your minister. I think that was pretty wise advice. So I went to my minister. I was intrigued. He had a white collar on. I wondered how he got that thing on and kept it on. And I sat in this rather austere office at the back of a stone-built Presbyterian church. And I remember as a 13-year-old, I said, Mr. Hawkridge, that was his name, Reverend Hawkridge, I said, I want to leave this boring church and go to a better church. He was a gracious man and understood my teenage zeal. He said, that's fine, Paul. If you're going to grow in your faith, I gladly release you. What a gracious man, you know. And then he turned it back on me. He said, by the way, he said, if there's any way you can use your newfound faith, you can pray for your Aunt Helen. My dad's older sister was dying quite painfully of bowel cancer at the time. Well, I responded with all the zeal of an evangelist. I said, of course I'll pray for her. And you know what, Reverend Hawkridge, I was really trying to get to this faithless, poor Presbyterian minister who didn't believe the Bible like I believe the Bible. You know, I said, you know what, Mr. Hawkridge, God's going to heal her. He nodded his head. He said, of course. I was surprised. I didn't think he believed that stuff. And then he looked at me, he said, of course. And he said things that changed my life and my theology forever. This is what he said. He said, of course God will heal her, Paul, even if he does so in the resurrection. And that's true. God will heal everybody, friends. One day this mortal will put on immortality. And we will shake away the pain and the agony of life and we'll rise immortal to be with him. That's the faith we proclaim. But sometimes, as tough as it is, we just go through sickness. That's how we handle it that makes the difference. It's whether you go through or just get stuck. And the list goes on. Huge lists of things that we go through, failed expectations. And I'm sure you could add to your list a dozen other things that are just tough to go through. So why do we go through? Why do we encourage one another to stick with it, to go through, to come out the other side? Well, let me share. I've just got four things I want you to know. If you go through in the plans of God, this will result every time in your life. Here's the first one. Number one, you will have a story worth telling. You go through, friends, you'll have something to say. You'll be able to stand tall. Your shoulders will be square. You will have a story worth telling. I think one of the things we do very poorly in our churches is glean the stories that are worth telling. If we had a few minutes today, I'm telling you we could go up and down these rows, and some of the stories represented here are just amazing. Some of you have already got stories that are just outstanding, and perhaps you've never told them. But I want to encourage you, get your story told. Start to articulate it. Ask if you could attend a small group and just share a story. Write out some notes, as hard as it might be. But there are stories, friends, that are worth telling. There are stories that are full of celebration. There are stories that just show that we could never have come this far without the God of grace who's kept us to this moment. That's what the Bible is all about. The Bible, friends, is stories that said we didn't anticipate going through that. We didn't expect what came our way, but blessed be God, we came through, and we're going to raise an Ebenezer. We're going to declare this: hitherto has God kept us, and if he's kept me this far, he'll keep me going forward. Tell your story, friends. And if you're just going through it and wondering what's on the other side, let me promise you this. If you stick with it, if you do not become weary in well-doing, if you hold strong and your knees don't give way, you will come out the other side and you will have a story that's worth telling. Something that brings honor to God. Something that builds other people's lives. Something that strengthens individuals. We wrote this book partially because of that. Some of the stories, I won't sort of give too much away, but right in the early part of our ministry, we were preaching out in the Pacific Islands. We're actually in Hawaii. You know, we got a call to Hawaii, so we prayed very earnestly about going and said yes. And it wasn't as glamorous as it sounds, and we were preaching and staying in a damp little apartment at the back of a church, and we're praying and fasting and seeking God for our ministry. If God didn't help us, we didn't know what the next step was, and I felt this strong impression, go to Samoa. Samoa. I mean, I grew up in another part of the world. I didn't know where Samoa was. I told Carol, we didn't know where it was. In those days, there wasn't Google, so we went down to the local library, got one of those huge big atlases. It took us an hour and a half to find Samoa. It was in the index, but try and find it on that big map. It's a map. It's a tiny little speck. Well, we found Samoa. Let me just fast forward. A little while later, we told a pastor. We felt led to Samoa. He said, great, I know someone in Samoa. Well, that was doubly exciting. There are people there. I thought that maybe they still ate people. I don't know, but you know. And so we know nothing about Samoa, this man. So he gives us an address. We write and we say, we're doing kids work. We did all kinds of kids work in those days and youth work. And we feel led to Samoa. And then we had a wait with bated breath for about 2.5 to 3 weeks. The letter came back. We were so excited. When Carol and I have any sort of real serious stuff to do, we always go into the living room. We make a good cup of tea. We're trying to help North Dakotans make good tea. They make terrible tea. But and so always got to have a little dash of milk. And, you know, you got to do it right. If you're going to do tea, do it right. You know, don't just stick a tea bag in a lukewarm cup of water. That's insipid stuff. But so we always have a good cup of tea, and we normally have a little bit of chocolate. So, I mean, that's serious family. You know, if our kids saw us bringing tea and chocolate, they knew there was a big family conference coming their way. And so we'd sit down. We were trembling. We couldn't wait to open this letter. We opened the letter. It was probably the rudest letter I've ever received in my life. Rude. I mean, really rude. It starts out with, who do you think you are? You know, I'm thinking, well, I didn't write to expect this. And he comes, we don't need you. We don't need kids work. Don't need youth work. We're fine on our island. We don't need people like you coming our way. Stay away. Don't write again. We were devastated. We didn't even finish the tea. And by the way, that put a determination in our hearts that we would always treat young people with utmost respect. And we've tried to do that to this day. We went to pray and God said, go to Samoa. Well, that was scary. You know, I tell you what, it was easier facing people who eat you than missionaries with that kind of attitude. And so we determined to go to Samoa. We took the few little offerings that we had. There wasn't much there. And I remember we made our way onto the airplane. And as we're making our way onto the airplane, we do the calculations. We suddenly realize that we arrive in this little island, 27 miles long, 1 mile wide, at about 1 a.m. in the morning. And we think, where are we going to go? Where are we going to stay? We'd spent every last penny we had on that airfare. And we didn't know how we would ever leave the island. It was pretty scary stuff. Carol's praying, oh, God, please, will you send a Christian taxi driver? Well, we get there. We go through the very small arrivals hall. There's a bus outside. I said to Carol, get on the bus. Get on the bus. I don't know where it's going, but at least it'll be better than sitting here for the next 3 hours. And so I put our one case underneath and I got on the bus. As I sat down, Carol said to me, Paul, did you see that nice couple standing outside the arrivals hall? I happened to have seen a nice couple. They were Caucasians, so they stood out a little bit. She said, I'm sure they're Christians. I said, I hope they're Christians. And then she got really feminine on me. She said, why don't you go and ask them who they're waiting for? I said, oh, don't be so silly, darling. And she said, and then she got even more feminine. She said, listen, if you make a fool of yourself, it doesn't matter. You'll never see them again. You know, how brilliantly feminine is that, guys? You know, and then I got super masculine and I believed her. So I got off the bus and I remember I went up to this couple. I said, excuse me, who are you waiting for? They said, Paul and Carol Alexander. I said, that's us. That's us. That's us. He looked me up and down. He said, I didn't think you'd look like that. I don't know what I'm supposed to look like. I ran back onto the bus. I said to Carol, oh, darling, I'm so glad God told me to go and speak to that couple. Come quickly. And you know, we got to keep our pride somehow. And so I got the case. They had a little pickup truck. I put the case in the back. I got in the back. Carol squeezed in the front. We went off to their small little apartment. They said, there's a room back there. Go and sleep. I said, no way are we sleeping. You're going to tell us what happened. They said, well, we run a little bookshop on the island. That's all we do. We have no other ministry. And the island is dominated, they said, by a group of congregational churches. And they haven't opened their doors to us for a long time, and we've really been praying. And so just a little while ago, they drove around to see us, the superintendent of the churches, and said, is there any way you could help us with children's work and youth work? And they said our hearts dropped. This was the open door, and we had no way to walk through it. So we prayed earnestly about it. That day, we had to go and get some mail. We drove around the island, went to Pongo Pongo, went up to the big central post office. As they're walking up the stairs, there's this very irate missionary walking down the stairs, and he's wagging a letter in his hand. He's shaking it. And this is what he's saying, not once, not twice, about five times. Paul and Carol Alexander. Paul and Carol Alexander. Who do they think they are? Youth work, children's work. We don't need them. I'm going to write to them and tell them we don't want them. And this couple thought, who are they? I wonder if they're still coming. So they went back to their apartment and they began to pray. And just like somebody had a word from God today, they had a word from heaven. And God said, be there at this time, 1 a.m. in the morning, and you will find them and they'll come and serve you. And our lives collided on that little island. The next day we moved around, moved in with Fiti and Savali Sunia. We served in 12 of those churches, literally everyone on the island. Kids worked morning and evening, youth services, preaching. It was the closest we've ever come to revival. It was quite an outstanding time. And some of you say, why don't we have stories like that? Well, friends, just do some living. Go through. Get something done. Sow a seed of faith. Get involved. Go on a missions trip. And I will promise you this, you will have a story worth telling when you come through on the other side. Now, I was told I have to finish in 4 minutes' time. Would you give me five? Just? I'm a well-mannered preacher. I want to come back again one day. You'll have a story worth telling. Here's number two. You will have a community worth trusting. Did you hear that, friends? You know, this thing called the Church of Jesus is a very complicated thing. And you will discover the best and worst in a community like this. Because after all, we are probably one of the biggest communities of dysfunctional people on the planet. Well, isn't that true? I mean, the Bible says that it's only for the sick that you need a physician. So actually, friends, our message is, if you're having a tough time, if life isn't working out, if things aren't going well, come to us and we will share a message of hope. And so it's no wonder, friends, that those of us who come and get added to the church, we've got some baggage, we've got lives behind us, and so sometimes the worst of us bleeds through. But let me tell you this, if you come through life and you become a living stone in the body of Christ and you belong and you commit, there will come a day where you will thank God with all of your hearts for this community of faith-filled people, because when it really is needed, this community will stand up for you. They'll come alongside you. They'll support you through it. There's something outstanding about the community of Christ-filled people. Our son was crossing this intersection in North Carolina 11 years ago. Coming up from his right-hand side was a 60,000-pound garbage truck traveling at 60 miles an hour. T-boned him, pushed his car 120 yards down the road, sheared the wheels right off the axles. Oh, just so much that I can tell. His heart literally went from here down into his abdominal cavity and back, ruptured his aorta. There's a 1% survival rate. As he came back, as his heart came back into place, his ribs were smashed, and one of the ribs went right down through the atrium of his heart, blew a hole this big between the left and right ventricles, penetrated the opposite side of his heart, and then came out. So just two of a catalog of injuries, you'll gather he was a pretty sick boy. They'd never admitted anybody that sick because they don't get to hospital. They die. Well, by the Wednesday, that was a Monday, and the Wednesday, they wouldn't let us into intensive care. They said, we're working on him. That's code language for we're losing him. We didn't know this, but they phoned our pastor and said, you'd better get here really quickly. We're losing this boy. He's not going to survive till lunchtime. Anna, my daughter, my wife, Carol, and myself, we went down to the cafeteria, pretty lonely place when you're going through those kind of dark situations. And we were sitting there, unable to even pray, no emotion, just pleading with God from the very depth of our being. And I'll never forget, it was a room about twice as big as this. I looked down the far end, the big swing doors at the end of that swung open. In walked our pastor, but not just our pastor, 18 other members of the church staff. We'd only been at that church for 4 months. I remember them walking down as they got to us. They said, don't say anything. They literally picked us up. They escorted us out. They found the little chapel of the hospital, sat us down, put three chairs, got in a circle around us. I'm not exaggerating when I say one of the great prayer warriors in that church, she literally washed my wife's feet with her tears, prophesied that this would not be unto death. And it wasn't. Our son went on to make a full recovery, long journey, and full of tears and agony. But I ask you this, how do you say thank you to people who stand with you like that? You can't. But that's what you experience in the faith-filled community of Jesus' people. And if you're just wavering or a bit on the outside or just orbiting this church, friends, as a visitor, but as a friend, I'd say just commit. Get in. Give it everything you've got. Believe God for an amazing future for this church, because there will come a day where you will thank God for the community of believers. If you go through, you will have a community that's worth having. Two last things. You'll have a confidence worth having. You'll have a community worth trusting. You'll have a confidence worth having. Have you ever heard those people who are just able to say, God's been so faithful and God's been so true and my faith is built on a solid rock? Have you heard those kind of cliches? And sometimes you say, where on earth have they been? How is it that they have that? My life's full of doubts and insecurities and I sometimes wonder what God's doing. Well, let me tell you this, friends. I declare this. If you go through what God has planned for you and you come out on the other side, I make you this promise. Something will rise on the inside of you. Something will be established within your spirit where you will be able to say, I have this confidence. God who was with me then is God who is with me now. I know whom I believed. I'm persuaded he's able to keep that which I've committed to him against that day. There is a place of deep internal confidence for Christ-following people. And by the way, the last thing that will happen if you go through is this. You will have a God worth worshiping. Can I encourage you this, friends? When you get together to worship, worship God passionately. He's worthy. He's worth it. He's deserving of our honor, especially for those who go through it and come out the other side. Now, I know that there are prayer warriors and prayer people in this church. Maybe I've touched just a raw edge of your life this morning. And I'm not going to leave it there. I'm going to say my goodbyes and pray God's blessing and ask God to do astonishing things in your church. But maybe some of you just need to come and commit to keep going through. Commit to staying with it so that you'll come out in God's perfect plan. And as we come and conclude the service and I hand back to your pastor, that's my encouragement.
You have been listening to the podcast of Casper Faith Assembly in Casper, Wyoming. For more information, please email us casperfaith@gmail.com or call us at 307-265-9121. We hope you've enjoyed this presentation of Casper Faith Assembly, where relationships matter most.